And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Uniden America Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. All right. Little glitch to the economy, or is this just an indicator of what we're going to see over the next couple of years as the GDP came in for the first quarter at 1.6%, below the 2.4% estimate. The personal consumption expenditure price index, a key inflation variable for the Federal Reserve, rose at a 3.4% annualized pace for the quarter, its biggest gain in a year. Consumer spending increased 2.5% for the period, down from a 3.3% gain in the fourth quarter and below the 3% Wall Street estimate. The fear is, because we were reading before from CNBC talking about the fact that state and government spending really helped to keep the GDP positive. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it would have been negative or not, we don't know, but that was a point that they made, that it kept growth positive in that time period of January to March, which brings us to the point of, will there be any rate cuts this year now when you see this happening? Now, normally you would. Normally you might say, okay, the economy's slowing down, rate cuts are coming. But with the key inflation factor going up, the fear now is stagflation.
Right, which we alluded to, I think it was last week, and that would be, because I think I said it, I can't remember if I said it on the air, our conversation, our talk show continues during the breaks off the air.
Right out to the cars. Yeah. I shut the door, and occasionally Eric still hasn't finished the sentence parking lot.
Don't cut me off. I gotta go.
And that's the, you know, the problem, and it has felt like at least in the first part of this year, the makings of stagflation. And when you have inflation and very little growth, very slow growth, and that's the problem, I think, going forward here, is that you're in – this is the problem, by the way, with not being serious about interest rates. If you're going to raise interest rates in order to get on top of inflation, then do it. And be serious about it, and you know what it's going to take. This whole idea of mitigation and that you can create a soft landing. No, Harry Potter. Put your wand down and go to work. It's going to require some heavy lifting. If you're going to do this, then do it. Because the other elements at play are, well, government spending.
Yeah.
Is there this huge, huge call from the American people to slow that?
Nope.
Nope. Not at all. So no. what are you looking to do? What are the things that, you know, where is the pressure? Well, again, the pressure comes from the inflation. Well, let's get on top of inflation, but not really get on top of inflation. No, you have to do the heavy lifting. If you're going to make that move, then skin that smoke wagon, as Kurt Russell would say. You're going to have to do it. It takes, you have to do something hard. Look back at what Volcker did. Look at the, my gosh.
Yeah, I got a few emails when we read all that off last week about what interest rates were.
What a kick in the midsection.
Yeah, but then you saw the rebound. You got into the last part of the first Reagan administration, then into the second.
Exactly. So what do you have there? You have the heavy lifting to build back the economy, to build back the necessary elements of a strong economy. You've got to get on top of the inflation. Well, because if spending, if consumer spending is getting down to, you know, very little, if nothing, if it's slowed to a trickle, if you're getting into this, if we're really creeping into this, not creeping into, driving straight into or in already stagflation, then it's time to do one or the other. What are you going to do? You're not going to lower interest rates. You're not, because then inflation would be even greater. You're going to accelerate inflation if you don't take care of it now.
Well, you make a great point, and I don't have the answer for this. I don't know what the answer is, but you made a great point, because we talked about the number of articles that came out and said that this inflation and the situation we're in now is different than even the 70s. Mm-hmm. And we saw how hard it was to tame inflation in the 70s. Well, I saw it. And everybody else is too young. No, I know that's not the truth. But when you look at this, they talked about the fact you didn't have this kind of debt. You didn't have the debt load. Mm-hmm. You didn't have this interest now on the debt that's approaching. You saw the other day, right now, and right now we're at a pace. Now it could change next month. Odds are it's going to go up, but $900 billion right now in interest. Right. So we're heading towards that billion, or that the $1 trillion. Good God, $1 trillion dollars in interest on the debt that we have to pay alone. And they said that's what's different this time. That and the analysis was, you have to raise rates and cut spending, but we're not going to cut spending. So if you're not going to cut spending and you're going to keep that in that inflation variable there, then how much more would you have to, or can you solve the problem by raising interest rates to levels that because you could raise interest rates high enough to set the country into a minor recession.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you could.
You can do it. They're not going to do it.
No.
And they're not going to cut spending. So they're not going to solve the problem. As we've said many times before, that the Republicans need to do this. They can't and won't. By the way, let me just stop for a second. Democrats, we haven't heard this yet. You need
or Republicans.
What'd I say?
You said Democrats.
Oh, no. God, Democrats don't listen to us.
No.
Republicans hardly do. But Republicans, we told you what your slogan should be. The Joe Biden and the Democrats can't and won't fix the problems because they caused the problems. And inflation is the perfect example for everybody because it affects them. And so is the border. And that's number one and two, almost tied for the top two problems. And you can win. By the way, you can win just on those two things alone.
Oh, yeah.
But they created the problems.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't solve the problems. They created the spending. They can't stop the spending. So they're not even going to try to do it. And that's really the interesting thing, as you know, the Democrats are out there. Where do the Democrats go long term, even when all the policies that they believe in have now hit reality? Reality is in treating their hypotheticals of economics or border control It's the hypotheticals aren't holding up against reality. So where do you go? You eventually, as a political party, have to offer solutions. They can't.
No, they can't. And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
And a couple of things here with Biden then also wanting to let the Trump tax cuts expire, right? You think about a couple of things on the economy front. You think about the spending power of the American family. That has been depleted greatly. Well, prices aren't going to come down. We haven't seen true deflation except for in the Great Depression. And so that's not going to happen, even at the target rate of inflation, which is 2%, prices will still continue to rise from where they are, which means what? That only a great expansion of the economy, which can happen, is what will bring that buying power back. That's what will bring that buying power back. That will also, in the right conditions, bring greater revenue to the federal government. Now, it's not going to solve the debt crisis. It isn't. But you do want, again, we've got to be careful. You want greater revenue to the government, but you also want that oversight. And I know I'm building a unicorn here in order to have the policy that will focus on the debt and controlling the spending. Again, I know it's a pretty large unicorn. I know that. But that's what your goal should be. And if you're letting the tax cuts expire, and I heard yesterday on Fox News that they were reporting, this goes against what Biden was promising, to not increase taxes on anyone making less than $400,000 when letting tax cuts, the Trump tax cuts, expire would actually effectively raise taxes for Americans. Many would see an increase on the average in the middle class of about $1,700 per year in what they owe in taxes. Well, when you do that, when you have lower taxes, it will increase the cost to or increase the revenue stream to the government. Remember Charlie Gibson asking Obama on the debate stage. You know, it's been, and Charlie Gibson then, as the moderator, said, well, it's been shown that when you lower taxes, you actually can increase the revenue stream to the government. And then Obama responded, yeah, Charlie, but, and I'm paraphrasing, yeah, Charlie, but we'll do it out of a sense of fairness.
No, he actually said.
He said sense of fairness.
That's almost a quote.
Yeah, it is. It's almost direct. And so, because we focused on those sense of fairness. Well, what is a sense of fairness? Is it actually even fairness? And then what is fairness? But the point being is that even when he was, and Charlie Gibson, not a conservative, didn't work for Fox News. He worked for ABC. So all these things you know, were pointed out to him, but he didn't care. They don't care. Look, far too many Republicans don't care about the national debt. They're not focused on it. That's because the constituents, with the exception of us conservatives, are not concerned about it. But when you look at all the policy in play, including letting taxes go up again, then the national debt crisis gets worse and worse and worse at every turn. The Fed is not going to move on interest rates. I suspect they won't move this year. I don't see a rate increase. I certainly don't see a rate drop. And so if you're not going to get on top of inflation, stagflation is here to stay. Jamie Dimon yesterday, they released it. I don't know when he did the interview, sat down with the Wall Street Journal. It's a video that they put out. And he says he's concerned that this could be the case in terms of inflation being fairly strong for now, not just 24, but 25 and 26. And he warned of back in the 70s. He said, look, in 72, people were still optimistic. By 73, no one was optimistic any longer. And then, of course, that went on for way, way, way too long. Well, we're in a situation here. And then, as you point out, now add on the national debt and where we are compared to then, and you've got a massive, massive meltdown waiting to happen if we don't choose a different path and choose it quickly.
Earlier, we gave you some analysis from CNBC. We'll have some of the analysis from the Wall Street Journal editorial page on the numbers that came out yesterday and the things that don't look so good for the future. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
After reviewing over 136,000 comments and more than 50 listening sessions, the Agriculture Department's come out now with a new set of nutrition standards for school meals, standards that will put limits on sodium and on added sugars in foods and in flavored milk.
I think all of this is designed to ensure that students have quality meals and that we meet parents' expectation that their children receive healthy and nutritious meals at school.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling reporters schools will have plenty of time to meet the standards.
It takes time to transition, to phase in a number of the aspects of this new rule. And so you'll see a series of phasing in over the course of the fall of 25 to the fall of 27.
Vilsack said many schools are already meeting the standards, and he pledged help and flexibility for those schools that are having trouble. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Tonight Radio, he's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. The analysis we gave earlier of CNBC of the numbers out there, this from the Wall Street Journal editorial page, but the details of the GDP report offer plenty of explanation for why voters are less than comforted by the White House assertions of prosperity. Consumer spending continued as a bright spot, increasing 2.5% and contributing nearly 1.7 percentage points to the GDP. Imports, which subtract from GDP but point to strong domestic demand, also increase. Investment is a different story. More than half of the contribution from investment to GDP came from housing, which many economists consider to be a form of consumption. Investment in business equipment grew, but a relatively modest 2.1%, which feels especially anemic since equipment investment has fallen in four of the last eight quarters. Much of what non-housing investment there is may result from government subsidies, which means no one should assume it will contribute to productivity growth or future GDP gains, one of the things that we brought up. State and local government spending was another strong point in the report, but that also isn't a source of future productivity gains. It's possible that slow business investment weighs more heavily on the public mood than economists assume. Americans can tell when their employers appear to be investing in the future and whether they feel secure in their jobs as a result. A quarterly report also showed a reversal of progress against inflation. The personal consumption price index rose 3.4% in the quarter after three quarters below 3%. This reinforces the rebound in consumer prices in the last 3 months that have caused the Federal Reserve to delay its anticipated reduction in interest rates. Slower growth with rising prices is a sign of stagflation, a political killer. So there you go. And that is, you know, when you look at that all, and again, the personal consumption price index does reflect what we sort of knew already, which is in the first 3 months, inflation grew. But that's more verification that it did.
Right. Yeah. And it's typical that you have the federal government, any administration in an election year, they'll kind of manipulate where they're going to, when they're going to spend money, when they're going to throw money into the economy in order to boast or pad the GDP numbers heading closer to the election. But if you're getting to a point where even that kind of spending on the state and federal level isn't enough to boost it, what does it say about what's going on with consumer spending? Right? If they can't even muster up enough of government spending to make the GDP look even healthy at all, then it could be very, very bad outside of that government spending.
They make the same point that we've made many times. So only sustained business investment and productivity growth can turn this around.
Yep.
And sustained isn't the word that jumps from the pages of this GDP report.
Exactly.
Red Eye. Now's your chance to be the caller. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, I want to make sure we got to this story, which we never did. This is John Lott Jr., who speaks a lot, as we know, on gun rights, and we've quoted him before. But he had a commentary in the Wall Street Journal: "The media saying crime is going down. Don't believe it. The decline in reported crimes is a function of less reporting, not less crime." And he goes into it. He goes, Americans think crime is on the rise, but the media keep telling them that we're wrong. A Gallup survey last year found that 92% of Republicans and 58% of Democrats thought crime was increasing. A February Rasmussen Reports survey found that 61% of likely voters say violent crime in the U.S. is getting worse, while only 13% think it's getting better. Journalists purport to refute this by citing official crime statistics showing a downward trend. Americans are not mistaken. News reports fail to take into account that many victims are not reporting crimes to the public, especially since the pandemic. The U.S. has two measures of crime. The FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program counts the number of crimes reported to police every year. The Bureau of Justice Statistics, in its National Crime Victimization Survey, asks some 240,000 people a year whether they've been victims of crimes. The two measures have diverged since 2020. The FBI keeps reporting less crime, while more people say they have been victims of the crime. The divergence is due to several reasons. In 2022, 31% of the police departments nationwide, including L.A. and New York, did not report crime data to the FBI. In addition, the cities from Baltimore to Nashville, the FBI undercounted crimes those jurisdictions reported. He doesn't give, I need a source for that. He doesn't give me a source for that one.
Hmm.
He just writes the FBI is undercounting crimes those jurisdictions reported.
Hmm.
I'd like to see where he got that from. Another reason, I'm not doubting it, I just want that to back it up. When somebody makes a claim, I just want the backup from somewhere. We know the police departments, we know that was verified, the police departments, especially in 2022, a lot of them weren't reporting. Another reason crimes reported to police are falling is that arrest rates are plummeting. If victims don't believe criminals will be caught and punished, they won't bother reporting them.
Hmm.
According to the FBI, if you take the 5 years preceding COVID and compare them with 2022, the percentage of violent crimes in all cities resulting in an arrest fell from 44 to 35% among cities with more than 1 million people where violent crime disproportionately occurs. Arrest rates over the same period have fallen from 44% to 20%. Arrests for property crimes dived even more sharply. FBI data shows that in 2022, 12% of reported property crimes in all cities resulted in an arrest. In cities of more than 1 million people, only 4.5% of reported property crimes in 2022 resulted in an arrest. Based on the National Crime Victimization Survey, only 42% of crimes, such as robberies or aggravated assaults, and 32% of property crimes, such as burglary or arson, were reported in 2022.
Hmm.
While the Justice Department doesn't track the number of prosecutions, the percentage of arrests that resulted in a prosecution appears to have fallen that year as well. In large cities, the arrest rate in 2022 compared to the 5 years before COVID fell an average of 38% for murders, 50% for rapes, 55% for aggravated assault, and 58% for robberies. While the rate of reported violent crimes fell 2.1% from 21 to 22, the National Crime Victimization Survey shows that total violent crime reported and non-reported rose from 16.5 incidents to 23.5 per 1,000 people. Non-reported violent crime in 2022 exceeded the 2015-2019 average by more than 17%. Data reflect the scant consequences criminals face. In 2022, in cities with more than a million people, only 8.4% of all violent crime reported and unreported, and 1.4% of all property crimes resulted in an arrest. Not all of those arrests resulted in charges.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Well, it reminds me of, you know, the type of reporting, and I wonder if there's any thought being given to this, if you're trying to skew the numbers, the comparison, there's always this comparison of, well, we're the most violent nation. We look at the crime stats in the U.S. compared to, say, Great Britain. Well, in many parts, if not most parts of Great Britain, they report the crimes differently. Like if one person were to attack three people, four people in one setting here in the U.S., that would be three or four different crimes. Well, in Great Britain, it's one crime. So the way that it's done, it kind of skews the numbers. You don't, whatever the effort is, whatever your goal is to, I don't know, protect the mindset of the public as to not scare them. And the fact of the matter, we know what crime is. If you live in these major cities, I don't know how many celebrities have talked about New York. Man, I love New York, but it's getting crazy. I can't live there anymore. I don't feel safe living there anymore. And that's the reality. You can try and paint the picture with the stats. But when you're telling people that live in these neighborhoods, oh, crime is down. They're not laughing at you. They're screaming at you.
You know, you make the point about crime and, you know, the reporting of crime. It'd be interesting to see more research on that. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see more research on it. And more publications actually, go after that. But you remember the same for infant mortality.
Yeah.
That was greater in the United States. And they said, well, wait a minute. You can't do that because in the United States, we are the one country that attempts to, go after, babies that are, what's the right word for it?
If they are,
for example, they're only 7 months or 6 months and.
Yeah, if they're premature.
Premature, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. A premature birth. We're one of the few nations that go after them and because we say we have the technology to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have, if you save 25% of those babies where 100% would be dead, you still add 75% of those babies would be put in the infant mortality classification. And they said that makes it unfair because the United States operates differently than a lot of different countries who won't do that.
Right.
He goes, that skews the numbers.
Right.
So, again, the devil's always in the details when you talk numbers.
Right. It is. And it's in the way it's reported. And again, perception is reality. And sometimes reality is reality when you're living in the scenario. So when now that we have. I think to a large extent, the credit should be given to Governor Abbott of Texas for bringing the whole, making other towns border towns, every town a border town, because the media started talking about it while the Biden administration was doing the same thing and transporting immigrants to other cities. The media didn't pay attention to that, didn't cover that until Governor Abbott started doing it. And now you see where the conversation is and the reality is changing numbers. The reality is changing numbers in those major metro areas, we believe. And with crime, it's the same thing. Well, look, crime is, you can't sit there and tell the people of that town, that city, that crime is down in their neighborhood, in their city, when they're seeing that it is clearly not. And one of the things is that the local media covers crime. You know, it's one of those things that it's always been the case. When crime is happening, they cover it. Local coverage, the local news is going to bring that and always keep that at the forefront.
I think it's even more than just the media covering it. I think more people are on the neighborhood apps.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think they are, too. I think they're very active in the conversation. The neighborhood apps have kind of changed things. It's not, when you're on Facebook, those are your friends and family, but they're not always people that live right there in your neighborhood. In fact, most often they don't, and often they don't live even in the same town. So, no, that's a great point. And on the neighborhood apps, now, we could probably do with a lot less of, hey, is that a bobcat? It's just a cat.
No. You know what ours is? If somebody comes up, they're, no solicitation. It's like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Somebody came up to my door and knocked on it. There's no solicitation. This person's breaking the law.
They're like, yeah.
Calm down, Karen.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, but it's like, what's this person doing at my door? They're just livid. It's like, wow. If a car goes fast through the neighborhood, somebody gets the license plates and puts it down, and it's on the social media, or the neighborhood app, which is closed, so it's not the same thing. It's closed to people, but it's, but you sign up for it. I mean, it's the same.
Exactly. Sebastian Maniscalco, in one of his stand-up specials, a stand-up comedian, does the thing about, you know, back in the day, you know, you would make a bundt cake just in case you had people show up at your door, right? Oh, come on in. We got cake. Come on in. Have some coffee. And now, these days, someone rings the doorbell. Shh. Quiet. Nobody say anything. Who is it? Who's at the door? Why would they be there? You know, and it's, I find myself.
There's a panic.
Well, no. I think it was last week, maybe the week before. You know, it's the middle of the day, and I'm in the office at the house, and the doorbell rings. Because, you know, here's the thing. Like, Amazon doesn't ring the doorbell.
Mm-hmm,
right. FedEx doesn't ring the doorbell, I guess, if you had to sign for something. But, you know, it's rare that delivery people ring the doorbell, even if they're delivering hot food from a restaurant. They just set it on the porch. See ya, in most cases, depending on how you have your settings on the app. And so someone rang the doorbell, and I'm, who is it? I'm getting on my security cameras. I'm, who's that? I don't recognize that person. They're not wearing a uniform. Who are they?
No, you
who are
right.
you with? Who you, sent you?
You got your phone next to you. Somebody rings the doorbell, and you're like, oop, go to my phone.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Too much of a hassle.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. They're leaving a card and putting it in the door. Oh, definitely I'm not going to answer.
Well, and I know a lot of people will use the, you know, two-way communications through whatever security cam or doorbell cam you have. And I don't like doing that because, number one, I don't want to admit I'm there.
Exactly.
I know you can do that and say and not be there. But the whole idea is to imply that you're there and you're watching your own home, you know. So I don't like doing that at all. I'm just going to watch the person and then keep quiet.
Nah, I don't like to talk to people. I think this whole talking thing is completely overrated.
I don't like that at all.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, the White House Correspondents' Dinner this coming Saturday, tomorrow, and the protesters say they're going to do everything to block it so it doesn't happen.
Mm.
This is really amazing what's going on when you think about it. There's going to be a backlash to it because, obviously, you know, the American public understands that this is, you know, pro-terrorism.
Yeah.
This is a pro-terrorism narrative that's being promoted. And you're not going to be able to sell it to the majority of Americans.
You no, can you're
sell
not.
It to some. Maybe young people are buying into it. I saw a reporter yesterday in the crowd. I think this was at NYU.
Mm.
And they talking to these two women. They had no idea why they were there.
Yeah. No.
They didn't know why they were there. They didn't understand. It was amazing how ignorant they were. Well, we just came to support everybody. Support what? Do you really know why? No, I'm not really sure. Neither am I, but we're here just to support everybody because we heard this was happening over here.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Crazy.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Welcome to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on. Right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those weekend golf guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.